you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Dukmasova, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. I'm now going to read you a headline from not today's newspaper, but yesterday's newspaper that tells you what's going on in the universe as we do this interview, and also tell you what this interview is going to be all about. This is a headline I read in an essay that was published in my beloved Chicago Sun-Times, home delivered every single day, the bright one, hardest working newspaper in America. And here was the headline on this essay. Release more records to determine if Emmanuel engaged in Laquan McDonald video cover-up. Here I say. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself, and then we're going to take the deep dive into this subject. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
My name is Matt Topic. I'm a lawyer at Lovey & Lovey in Chicago, and I'm the one who litigated the case that forced Rahm Emanuel to release the Laquan McDonald shooting video.
Yes. The key word in that sentence is forced, okay? Forced, as in kicking, screaming, dragging, and spending taxpayers' dollars resisting. And I got to tell you, Matt Topic, first of all, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come talk to me. I appreciate it. You are also the author of this essay, Release More Records to Determine If Emmanuel Engaged in the Laquan McDonald Video Cover-Up. And I call Matt immediately after I read the essay. I was cheering. My wife would go, why are you making so much noise? It's just Sun-Times. And it's not even a sports section. And I'm like, man, this dude is just like telling it like it is. And because I'm going to say this, ladies and gentlemen, before we begin this interview. 2014, Jason Van Dyke shot Laquan McDonald 16 times. Killed him. The official police report, the only comment, Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, that came out of the police department came from a Fraternal Order Police spokesperson that day who said essentially it was an act of self-defense. And then we learned subsequently that there was videotape. And so the world awaited. Was it self-defense? Would the videotape corroborate that? And the city would not release that videotape until Matt Topic's client filed a FOIA case, a FOIA appeal. Well, you should take it away from there, Matt, because this gets into the heart of whether there was a cover-up by Rahm Emanuel and the city of Chicago regarding Laquan McDonald's death. So why don't you take it from the top, as you were the lawyer, and tell folks what happened before we got that tape released, before a judge ordered the city to release that tape. So take it away.
Let me start by explaining a little bit about this thing called the Freedom of Information Act, because probably some people listening to this have heard of it. Maybe they've seen it referenced in the newspaper. But let me tell you a little bit about it. It's a good friend of mine. It's how I now make a living. And I think it's one of the most important laws that we have in this country. So we have one in Illinois. We have them in other states. There's one that applies to the federal government. Sometimes it's called freedom of information. Sometimes it's called open records, public records, sunshine laws, things like that. And what all these laws say is that government records belong to the public, that there is a presumption that every government record is subject to disclosure whenever somebody asks for it, except there's a number of instances in which the government can rightfully withhold the record, but the presumption is that it has to be disclosed, and the government has to prove that one of these exemptions applies to the record in order to withhold it. And if you request a record, and if the government refuses to produce it, you can take the government to court and you can ask a judge to decide whether the government has proven that all the elements of those of the exemption that they assert actually apply to this record. And in most states, including Illinois, if you prevail, the government has to pay your legal fees for having to bring the suit. And so I started my career at sort of a traditional corporate kind of law firm, and I fell into doing these kinds of cases as pro bono cases. And over time, I found that like this is what I really love to do. I love fighting with the government. I love that they're used to bullying people. They're used to even bullying some journalists. And I love that I can come in and flip the tables on them completely and put the burden on them and take them to court and make them prove it. And you know what? Very often they can't prove it. They withhold records as a knee-jerk reaction. And usually there isn't a valid basis to do that. And going back in time, I mean, the laws existed since the 80s at least, but it gets enforced here and there, but nobody was really saying like, this is what I'm going to spend my day doing every day is doing tons of these cases. So that's what I decided I wanted to devote my career to. And so for the last 7 years or so, I've been at this civil rights firm, Lovey & Lovey, focusing on practicing that kind of law. So, Laquan McDonald, you know, was sadly murdered in 2014. You're right that a very tan Pat Camden went in front of the news cameras, and this is in October, November kind of time of year. Maybe he flew back from Florida for it. I don't know, but I do know that he said that Laquan was lunging at officers with a knife, which was never corrected by the police department. I think the police department put out some kind of a press statement. I think it wasn't quite as detailed as what Camden had to say, but they certainly didn't say, oh, no, that's not right. We've seen the video. He wasn't lunging. So that's just out there, right? For a while, nothing's really, you know, happening with it. Journalist Jamie Calvin gets tipped that it's not true, that he was shot 16 times in the back, that there's video. Jamie gets the autopsy. It shows 16 shots. Already the police story is changing. Because they didn't tell us, I think they said he was shot in the chest, and that I guess is true, but followed by like 14 shots in the back that they didn't tell anybody about. Right. So it's starting to get some noise, and everybody's making FOIA requests for this. I'm sure the Tribune did, the Sun Times probably did, you know, TV stations, national news. I mean, lots of folks are asking for this, and it's pretty common at that point that that the police would say, well, it's an ongoing investigation, and so we're not going to release the record to you. The problem with that isn't what the law says. The law says not only does there have to be a pending investigation, but they have to prove that it would interfere with a pending investigation to release it. And so that's really where we started to look at this and say, I don't think that they can prove that. It's now been quite a bit of time since the shooting. And in any event, we can go to court. All we have to say is they denied the request, and now they have to prove their claim. We play defense, and we say this is why they haven't met their burden. So Brandon Smith, who's a freelance journalist who I knew from doing some other cases, and he covered some cases I was doing, he came to me sort of in the spring of 2015. You know, I knew of the Laquan case, but I hadn't been really paying super close attention to it. And he says, I made this request for the video. Lots of people are asking for the video, and I want to sue for it. And so, like, okay, I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, I think we could take a shot at this. I'm happy to. And the city slow rolls him for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks. And eventually they deny the request and they say, you know, ongoing investigation, you can't have it. And we then, this gets us to August, we file suit in Cook County Chancery Court, like, immediately. And, you know, what we didn't want to have happen is the thing get drawn out for a long period of time. And then eventually, you know, whenever any investigation ends, which who knows how long that would have been, then they would release the video at that point, you know, when they wanted to release the video. And our view was, no, this is important. It needs to come out. It needs to come out now. It should have come out a long time ago, but we shouldn't have to sit around and wait until your investigation may or may not end at some point in the future. So we went into court and very quickly said to the judge, we want to do this on an expedited basis. The statute says that that you're supposed to expedite these cases in appropriate circumstances. So we want really quick briefing schedule. And we got one that was pretty quick that got us from August through, I think the argument was in like mid-October. So we're talking like 2 to 3 months time until we're briefed and we're arguing the case to the judge, which is pretty fast. And very much to the judge's credit that he agreed to do that and agreed to move it quickly. So you know, in the course of that, the city says, oh, there's these investigations being conducted by the FBI or by the state's attorney's office, and they still have to interview witnesses. And if you release the video, then it interferes with their ability to do an objective interview with the witness. And I'm thinking, like, well, what good is the witness interview if it conflicts with the video anyway? Seems like a stretch to me. I mean, you know, that doesn't really make sense. And also, you know, if you're really concerned about witnesses and not tainting their testimony, why are you out there saying he's lunging with a knife, or at least allowing it to be said that he's lunging with a knife? You're saying it was self-defense. I mean, and this is, Ben, this happened in many cases since then. They continue to do this to this day. They will tell you what they said happened, but they won't give you the evidence because they're saying that there's going to interfere with interviewing these witnesses. And what do you think is going to happen to the witnesses when you've told the world this person had a gun or this person had a knife? And if you're a witness who didn't see a gun and didn't see a knife, then they're putting you on notice that you're going to be saying something that the Chicago Police Department doesn't agree with. So go ahead and say that at your own risk. And I think a lot of people rightfully would be concerned that if they saw something that isn't what the police said happened, that they might be, you know, that's an uncomfortable situation to be in. And not everybody has the fortitude to be in that situation. So anyway, so we litigate, right? And so they've tried to say, you know, this kind of theory. And we have the argument, and it's clear as day to me at the argument that the judge is not having their argument. He's basically, you know, the law has said for a long time, you've got to, when you prove these exemption claims, you have to do it with specifics. You've got to furnish affidavits that really get into the details. You can't just wave your hands and say ongoing investigation. And that's essentially what they did. And it was, you know, I think pretty clear from the hearing that what was going to happen. So we have the hearing, and then the judges are going to come back on November 19th, and I'm going to give you a ruling then, which from a kind of press standpoint, like, was just a beautiful situation because, like, we had this date on the calendar. And so the week leading up to that, you know, you've got, you know, you've even got John Cass saying, like, oh, the video needs to come out. So, like, there's this big buildup to it. Okay. There's this huge buildup to, and we could do a side journey on why Cass would say that. And I mean, no disrespect, but my point is, you know, somebody who typically I think is sort of, you know, very sympathetic to the police in many instances. Maybe that's not fair. You know, John, if you're listening, I apologize if you think that's unfair, and I'd gladly talk to you about it. But the point is, it just sort of, there's this big buildup to this thing. And so we show up and pack courtroom, TV cameras out in the hall, and judge is reading the ruling, you know, and there's like, the city's got like, I think like three different claims. They're all very similar, but they're not quite the same. And so he's going through them one at a time, and we're winning. And I'm just sitting there like crossing my fingers, like, please, please don't let the last one be, but we lose because of this one. Right. And then we clear all the hurdles, and he says, you know, video's got to be released. And, you know, we're all very excited at that point. And then, you know, I'll give you two more minutes of the story. The judge gives them until like the Wednesday before Thanksgiving to release it, which is basically like a week. The city wants a stay, which means saying, okay, we're going to appeal. And so don't enforce your order until the appeal is done, because otherwise the video is going to come out. And what's the point of the appeal? And they hand up this motion after they lose, you know, saying, judge, you should wait until we appeal. And I say, you know, judge, can I have till tomorrow can I file a brief tonight and come back tomorrow and we'll settle that? He said, no, I'm going to go off the bench for 5 minutes, prepare your argument and I'll hear it. Right. And I'm sort of thinking, well, he's going to give him the stay. It's been pretty common to give him the stay, but there's sort of this, you know, there's factors like how likely they are to succeed and what's the public interest. And so he comes back out and I argue those in, you know, much to my surprise to some extent, and certainly to my happiness, he says, no, I'm not giving you the stay, which meant that the administration would have had to done like an emergency motion with the appeal, with the appellate court. And the next day was when they said, we're going to release it, but they don't tell us when. They don't tell us anything. I'm calling the city's lawyer. He doesn't know anything. You know, we're in the dark. And then we just find out, okay, there's going to be this press conference. We show up at the press conference. They won't let us into the press conference because we didn't have CPD press credentials. So we're standing on the other side of the outside wall where they're having the press conference, watching it on the news trucks when it gets released. And then it comes out, and, you know, it was absolutely horrible. I was prepared for, you know, what it was going to show, that it's hard to watch. I mean, the things everybody knows, it's an awful thing to see. But the thing that just really still sticks with me, because I should have been expecting it, but I wasn't, was after he shot, you got all these Chicago police officers standing around like they're waiting, like to get coffee, like just couldn't care less. Well, this guy's bleeding out and dying on the street. I mean, to me, that was just an even more remarkable sign of just how broken policing is in this country. So that's the what, 5-10 minute version of that story, Ben.
Wow, there's so much to pick up on from that story, and I'll just start with this point, which popped in my mind at the very end. This is of relevance at the moment because Rahm Emanuel, mayor of the city of Chicago, whose law department was battling Matt Topic and Brandon Smith in court. That Rahm Emanuel, of course, was nominated by President Biden to be ambassador to Japan. And there was a confirmation hearing in front of the Senate. And Matt Topic was notably not asked to show up and just tell the story he just told now. And had he been asked, had you been asked and you recited the story you just told now, which you did a very good job, I do not know how in good conscience the senators of the United States could pretend as though Rahm was just following the rules and that there was no cover-up of the police shooting of Laquan McDonald. I do not know how you could subject Matt to cross-examination. Some senator who would be sympathetic to Rahm could try to grill Matt. Good luck, Senator. And with that one, if John Cass can see that the tape has to be released, you know the tape has to be released, because John is sort of Mr. MAGA in the city of Chicago. All right. Now, the other point I want to make is, and I get your direct response to this. By the way, would you have been willing to testify at that hearing had they asked you, Matt?
It is on my bucket list to testify in front of the United States. So I would be... I would have been thrilled to have the opportunity to do that. And if you are a U.S. senator still deciding what you want to do with this, I mean, I think we're past the point of testimony because it's out of committee. But I would gladly tell my story. And you know, we've only taken the story, Ben, up to the release of the video. You know, a lot of stuff happened after that. And I think part of the issue with a lot of this is what do you make of the stuff that happens afterwards? And I think there were, the problem certainly continued. I mean,
all right, well, we'll get to the afterwards. And the other point I wanted to make about FOIA law in general, and I realize that you're really good at what you do. I have a lot of friends who've used you. Shout out, McDonkey. And we need people like you. So what I'm about to say is not in any way intended to be disparaging to lawyers who are make a living out of fighting the FOIA law. But what a worthless law. And I read the judge's ruling. Let's give him a shout out. Franklin Valderrama was the circuit court judge who had the guts to defy Romulus. I read his ruling. And Matt, I got to tell you, a lot of it was just over my head. And there's no way Brandon Smith or any community activist could have battled Rom's lawyers. They needed you. They needed a lawyer who spoke the language. There's all like references to ruling and blah, 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 legalese. And what a worthless law, the FOIA law. And I always tell Danny Malopoulos, who's a FOIA guy from WBZ, Ace Bulldog Investigative Reporter, is always filing FOIA stuff. I go, Danny, no. This law is set up to prevent the dissemination of information that they should just be giving out anyway. This is just an exercise that they put you through to figuring that 99 out of 100 people will drop out of exhaustion. And so that's my general reading of FOIA law. What a worthless law. It does the exact opposite of what it's intended to do unless you have a lawyer like Matt Topic who could defend you or take your position. Feel free to vigorously disagree with me at this point, Matt, if you choose. Go.
I will both agree and disagree with that. So I think you're right that on a few things here. The law is routinely violated. It was routinely violated by Daley. It was routinely violated by Emanuel. It continues to be routinely violated by Mayor Lightfoot. It's both political parties do it. It happens at all levels of government. There is just a it's just like politicians are hardwired to keep information away from people that might be bad for them. So you're right in that it's the rare government official who is going to embrace the letter and spirit of the statute and ensure that they comply with it because that's what's best for their constituents. Sadly, that doesn't really happen very much, if at all. If they think they can come up with a basis to withhold it and it might be bad for them, they're going to withhold it, even though that's not the way the law is supposed to work. I think, you know, what the law says you're entitled to in Illinois is one of the better statutes. I mean, we have very robust disclosure. There are a lot of states where the Laquan McDonald shooting video could have been legally withheld simply because it showed the police acting like the police, or at the very least because there was some investigation, even though they couldn't show it would harm any investigation. So the rights that the statute says we have are strong. Here's where I'm going to disagree with you, is what the Illinois FOIA has and a lot of states have is the provision that says you don't have to be able to pay for Matt Topic or any other lawyer, because if you win, the government has to pay your legal fees. And that's the game changer. That's what allowed this to happen. I lead a team that is currently litigating probably about 260 or 270 state and federal Freedom of Information Act cases. We could do 10 times that. It's just a matter of connecting with the people who've had their rights violated, or people don't realize that they don't necessarily have to be able to afford a lawyer in order to bring a case like this. And so, you know, I think we've had a pretty healthy track record, whether it's Laquan, we did Rahm Emanuel's private emails, you know, we did that. I mean, we've done stuff on Navy Pier, we've done stuff. I mean, you name the issue. We've got stuff still pending on Jussie Smollett. I mean, a lot of good stuff has come out. I just did Mueller. We just won in the D.C. Circuit for BuzzFeed, release of additional parts of the Mueller report. So you can win when you get to court. And, I, you know, we don't win all the time, but we win way more than we lose.
No, I hear you. you're essentially we're agreeing. You're proving my point, actually. And yes, God bless the provision of the law that allows attorneys to claim attorney fees. And I'm glad you said that. Because without that, there would be no incentive for attorney. You couldn't make a living doing it and filing these cases. And they will put you through the ringer, Matt. You know this. They'll drag it out. Mayor Rahm had all those lawyers in the legal department. They could stretch this thing out for a year if they want. So you're absolutely correct. I will give credit to the state of Illinois for having that provision in their law. All right. You mentioned that after the judge made his ruling, the story continued. Why don't you pick up your narrative about the Quan McDonald video post judge's ruling? Go ahead.
So video comes out, you know, people are rightly horrified. Rahm does the thing that, you know, I got to say he's pretty darn good at is, yeah, he's in a bad spot. So it's how can I turn this into something good? I mean, you really got to tip your hat to how good he is at, because he is really good at that.
Something and that's for him. Something good for him.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. I should have made that explicit. I assumed everyone would understand. That's what I meant. But yeah, something good for him politically. You know, this he's got this stuff about crisis and opportunities and blah, 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 blah. So then it immediately shifts. Then it is, I'm appointing this task force that Lori Lightfoot was involved in. I'm going to fire McCarthy, who was responsible. Scott Ando leaves, who would run IPRA, who was asleep at the wheel, I would say, on all this. He goes on TV and says he acknowledges that there is a code of silence. He really shifts into now he's the police reformer, you know, and that's good. It's good. I mean, that task force report, it's got a lot of good stuff on it. It's got a line that says, you know, basically the data gives credibility to the belief that many people have that the police department is racist. It doesn't, I don't think it said racist, but doesn't value the lives of Black people. That's good stuff. I mean, that, of course, people have been saying that for a really long time. And, you know, it's not like the city didn't have this video for all this time. And what did it take? Well, it took getting the video out there and forcing their hand to sort of have a moment where now Rahm is going to, you know, get on the other side of this so he can be the reformer at the end of the day. He's, I'm sure, already looking 2 years down the line and he's thinking, I'm going to take a hit now, but I'm going to do this in a way where when it's over, I get to be the person who reformed the Chicago Police Department, and I'm going to get, or at least I'm the one who, I'm going to have good talking points for the future about what I'm going to do next. You know, I'm a cynic. I mean, you know, I would like to think that once he really, you know, and I don't know when he saw it. I don't know if he saw the video, you know, when the world saw it or a little before the world saw it or whether he saw it a long time before that. But, you know, I'm not going to say that he, you know, is heartless and he wasn't affected by seeing it and didn't care about it. But I am going to point out that it took really being called out and it took a judge telling the city they had to release the video to get to the point where we should have been. I mean, we should have been in this city decades ago. I mean, honestly, of course. Right. So, you have the Police Accountability Task Force. You know, they come out with that. An interesting story in that. You know, they have all these things that they want to do. And I think their report came out like on a Tuesday, and I got an email. I think it was from now Mayor Lightfoot, or it might have been somebody else on the task force, copying her, saying, "We want to talk to you and your client about, you know, the changes we're proposing, and, you know, all this great stuff." I'm like, "Okay, fine." We have a call. They're like, "All right, well, our video release policy is going to be 60 days, and, you know, maybe up to 90 days." And we're like, "Well, but the statute says 5 days, so we're not really sure what's with." "Oh, well, you know, we need to." I'm like, "No, that doesn't really That's not going to work. The law is 5 days. And, you know, we talked for a second and then we didn't realize it was about to come out. Then it comes out the next day. And at some point they made sure to note that they talked to us. They didn't really listen to us, but you know, they could say that they talked to us, you know, to try to do whatever with that. But, that comes out and then we're starting to talk, federal investigation into pattern and practice and, you know, the ability of the federal government to come in and put federal judicial oversight on police reform. And, you know, first there's resistance, Rahm saying, oh, I don't think we need to do that. Then there's pushback. Then he says, okay. Then Trump gets elected. Jeff Sessions, you know, couldn't care less about civil rights enforcement and says, we're going to get out of the business of telling police departments who they can and can't beat the hell out of whenever they feel like. And so then Rahm like, oh yeah, we're going to do this through like, you know, something other than a consent decree, gets called out, gets sued by the state AG. And okay, now they're back. So there was a lot of this, like you still had to keep bringing them back in. And I think that's the story of what happened afterwards. You have some good things that happened only because they politically had to, and you had resistance, you know, wherever possible to other things.
All right. I'm going to take exception with one brief point you made, and I think it's worth making this exception. You said, maybe I am a cynic, meaning you, Matt Topic, are a cynic. And I will say this to that. You are not a cynic. You're a realist. The cynic in this is Rahm Emanuel. The cynic in this is the guy who pretends as though he's all about making sure that a guilty party, potentially guilty party, in this case, Jason Van Dyke, is brought to justice, and that he believes in guaranteeing that all lives are treated the same when someone is killed. When in fact, what we saw was that the city of Chicago had no intention whatsoever of prosecuting Jason Van Dyke for the death of Laquan McDonald until Matt Topic and Brandon Smith convinced a Cook County judge to release that video. And suddenly, Mayor Rahm, trying to turn himself to save the day for his neck, as you pointed out, flips the switch and starts singing a different song. That is a cynical attitude. That is a cynic. That is a person who doesn't believe in absolutely anything except preserving himself. And in fact, Mac Topic, I'll put this out there, get your response to this. Rahm buried that evidence of the police, Jason Van Dyke's murder of Laquan McDonald, precisely because he did not want a confrontation with the Fraternal Order Police over investigating a police officer for murder on the eve of an election. And the mayoral election was 2015. I don't think Rahm cared one bit if black people were mad at him. He just didn't need a contentious battle with FOP on this. And Matt, people have been telling me since I moved to Chicago in 1980, the one thing mayors were afraid of is fighting with the police in high-profile cases where you have to prosecute a police officer. I've had people tell me, you think Mayor Daley's so powerful? He's afraid of confronting the police. And I submit to you, to quote Harold Washington, that's exactly what Rahm Emanuel was doing. He was trying to avoid a very contentious battle. And so he paid $5 million to the Laquan McDonald's family, hoping that would shut it up. And when Brandon Smith picked it up and hired you as his lawyer and brought the case before the judge and got the judge to rule, that was the moment when the cynic flipped the switch and said, okay, I got to go to plan B and how I deal with this. So to me, that is a classic cover-up of a murder to protect his political interests. What's your response to what I just said?
Yeah, I don't disagree. Let me start with the power of the Fraternal Order of Police. Yeah, I mean, you look at let's look at the contract. I mean, it's the amount of deference that's given to the police union is, you know, pretty shocking. I mean, the way it's supposed to work is the elected officials who are accountable to the people, that they're the ones who say, this is how we're going to enforce the laws. These are the laws that should be enforced. These are the laws that I don't think are a priority. This is how I want you to use force or not use force. And you see the FOP like weighing in on all this stuff. Like, just, we tell you how it's supposed to work and you go out and you do it. You don't tell us, you don't make law enforcement policy. You don't say this is when we should be using force or not using force. That's not for you to decide. And we've ceded so much power to them. And I think your point is a good one, that they've had a lot of political power. The extent to which that has been changed by the, you know, they've always been a difficult institution, but over the last 5 years, I think it's really gone in a, you know, off the rails in a really strange, in a way that's way outside the political mainstream now, I would say. But anyway, so police union, you know, now whether obviously I don't know whether what did Rahm decide and why did he decide it and what information was before him and what did he think about, you know, I don't have subpoena power. I can't make Rahm sit down for an interview and tell me the answers to those questions. The inspector general can do that. The FBI can do that. Anita Alvarez, who was the state's attorney, she could have done that. So there is a way to get to that answer. But, you know, that's sort of, that's where FOIA only takes you so far. I mean, you know, if there was a, you know, and we can talk in a minute about what does cover up mean, but, you know, if there was a criminal conspiracy to obstruct justice, that's probably not documented in records. And that's all that FOIA gives you access to. You're not entitled to answers to questions. You're only entitled to records. And so, and we saw in the Rahm private email stuff, you know, that he's pretty savvy about email. I mean, most of his emails were like three words. My favorite, it's a quick side story. My favorite gem that came out of that is I forget which alder, you know, had this long sycophantic email to him that probably took days to like figure out how to write, saying like, you know, you're getting beat up in the press over Laquan, and I can be helpful to you, and I can put me in coach, I can do all right. And the response he gets is, okay, thanks, all lowercase with no punctuation from Rahm. So that's, you know, you wouldn't see that necessarily in that. So anyway, I've gone a little bit afield, but that, you know, your theory, I think, certainly makes a lot of intuitive sense. And you're right that he would have hell to pay with the FOP for releasing. I mean, the FOP is still saying, even though this gets, they and the city have lost over and over again, they're like, allegations of police misconduct are public records. And if they're not substantiated, it's not a privacy invasion to have that released. In fact, under Illinois law, police officers don't, and no government officials, have any privacy rights about anything in connection with their performance of public duties. But they still make that argument over and over again. So, you know, clearly no real value of transparency there. So I think you're right that there's that's a theory that is definitely plausible.
All right, the alderman in question, and I can't believe I know this, who wrote that sycophantic email, I'm pretty sure it was the former alderman of the 49th Ward, Jolton Joe Moore, the pride and joy of Evanston High School. And I'm pretty sure Joe Moore was the author of that email. I remember reading that and going, come on, Joe, how far the mighty have fallen. Speaking of Joes, another Joe Ferguson, former inspector general, wrote a letter to the Senate, essentially, how do I phrase this? Essentially saying that Rahm was not guilty of a cover-up. And in fact, I think he said it was unfair to even accuse him of that. I was very disappointed with that letter that Joe Ferguson wrote. I'm not quite sure what prompted him to write in it. He, of course, is the former inspector general. He's not the inspector general anyway. So let me get to the issue of whether you consider this a cover-up. Now, you said something, I wrote it down, a criminal conspiracy to obstruct records, which I presume is something you could prosecute a public official for, that you know, the FBI could do an investigation and the feds could prosecute him for doing that, as opposed to a
to obstruct justice.
Right. My bad. To obstruct justice, as opposed to a cover up, which is a more generic term that people like me use. Like, oh, they just wanted to bury it. Now, whether it's legal or not, what they did is legal or illegal is a whole other issue. But it's immoral. It's unethical. It's a violation of all the things they say they're going to do when they pledge that they're going to be the most transparent mayor the city of Chicago has ever seen. It's all of those things. Whether it is of itself an indictable offense, I do not know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a prosecutor. But I know what stinks to high heaven. So why don't you help us out, Matt, and talk about a little bit about the difference between criminal conspiracy, obstruct justice, versus just the generic cover up.
Well, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm not a criminal lawyer. So this is just going to be sort of approximate. But the idea is, like, I mean, there can be a, you know, the violation of someone's civil rights is a you know, can be a federal crime. And if you are all in a conspiracy to try to deny someone their civil rights, you could have, you know, charges associated with that. Obstruction of justice, you know, certainly if you destroyed evidence of a crime, I mean, that is obstruction of justice. But in terms of, like, sort of keeping it from the public, you know, that's something different. That's not, you know, that is probably not a crime, absent a pretty aggressive read of a law called the Local Records Act, and that's a different subject for another day. So typically, like, you don't, you know, there's no crime in violating the Freedom of Information Act. You are breaking the law. The law says you have to release something and you're not releasing it. You don't have a basis not to release it. You have broken the law. Now, it isn't a crime. Now, you know, I'm going to confess, you know, that exactly what is within the jurisdiction of an inspector general is a little bit beyond my expertise. But, you know, I think there is certainly, you know, that the IG has, in fact, you know, gone beyond just investigating whether there's been a crime, even investigating whether city policies have been violated, to sort of investigating whether we're getting good government, you know, whether there's waste, whether there's, you know, sort of just bad government, even if it isn't illegal government. So this, you know, cover up, I guess, it's sort of like collusion, which we've all gotten to know pretty well as a term. You know, it isn't a legal term. And so, you know, to say that, you know, that there was no collusion, you know, no, actually Mueller did not find that there's no collusion. He found that there was not a criminal conspiracy, or then there wasn't coordination with a foreign entity. So, you know, that is a little different question from, you know, something like collusion or something like a cover-up that really is getting more like, are you acting in the best interests of the public or are you doing something else? And so, you know, I read cover up in my world means something broader than, you know, did you involve yourself in something criminal? And also, you know, you kind of have this idea of like, well, let's get beyond whether it's criminal or not. And sort of like, was there like an active conspiracy to not release the video, or was Rahm personally responsible for the decision not to release the video? It's some point, and I think that point probably came at least when we filed a lawsuit, that must have hit his desk. I mean, I can't imagine that the corp counsel wouldn't have alerted him that there is a lawsuit for this video. And so at the very least at that point, he's aware that, you know, that there were requests and those requests had been denied. And I think he, you know, it absolutely at the very least had the power to say, wait a second, we're withholding this. I think that this ought to be released. This shouldn't be withheld. I want the public to see this. The public ought to see this.
No, that's a very good point that you make. And that is almost laughable. If you watch Rahm Emanuel's performance before the Senate, he certainly leads you to believe that he was just patiently waiting for all the investigations to conclude before he willingly released the video. And the police weren't even investigating. There was no evidence that the police were still investigating the shooting of Laquan McDonald. So it's like he'd be still waiting for the investigation to, the non-existent investigation, be concluded. Which brings me to this question. Matt, had you not prevailed, had you not successfully convinced Judge Valderrama to order the city to release that video, what do you think would have happened next?
Well, here's what probably would never have happened. I don't think that the Cook County State's Attorney would ever have brought any charges. We haven't really talked too much about, you know, Anita Alvarez and her role in this. But, you know, within days, well, with in between the announcement that the video would be released and the release of the video, she brought charges and, you know, told us all, oh, the decision had already been made. As a quick side note, whenever I hear something like that, you know what I'm doing. I'm making a FOIA request for the documents that would show me that you were already I want to see the draft indictment. I want to see the memos, the prosecution memos. I want to see that stuff that shows me that what you said is true. And we made that request, and they didn't have any documents that fit that bill. So, you know, I don't know. So I don't think Anita Alvarez was in any hurry to charge a Chicago police officer with anything for the same reasons you mentioned earlier. She's got the same issues of the FOP and other, you know, police, you know, countywide police folks, you know, not wanting to get sideways with them. The feds, I don't know. I mean, you know, it was a long time. When you see the video, like, it's like, what else do you really need to know? I mean, you got a handful of officers on the scene. You subpoena them. You bring them in front of the grand jury. You ask them the questions. You have the video. I don't see why it would take more than, like, you know, a couple months to figure it out. I mean, the video shows the whole interaction. It's not like there's additional context that you had to get from other witnesses. It's not like, you can't really tell. It's a bad angle. I mean, there it is. It's clear what happened. Jason Van Dyke pulled up. He jumps out of the car and he pretty much immediately starts shooting, and he keeps on shooting, you know, for 16 shots, including while he's laying on the ground. I don't know what else you really need to see or what else you need to investigate. And what that tells me is, you know, if they were going to do anything, well, why the hell didn't they do it already? And so I'm pretty dubious of the idea that, like, this was all going to happen anyway. You just had to be patient. And then, yeah, sure enough, you know, he would be charged. I don't think there's really any evidence to support that I've seen. So
yeah, I'm at the risk of being called a cynic. I would say I'm very doubtful that President Barack Obama's Justice Department would have initiated proceeding against Mayor Rahm Emanuel's police department at roughly the same time that Barack Obama is appealing to Rahm for help in building the Obama Center. And so I just been around Chicago politics a long time, Matt, and I firmly believe that without a victory by you and your client, Brandon Smith, getting that, convincing that judge to release that tape, that they'd still be investigating as we speak. And I'll just say this about Anita Alvarez. I hear your point that she, I think you were absolutely correct when you said that indictment was a hurry up after the fact of the release of the video. But nobody's proposing to make her, I don't know, the head of the Justice Department, if you follow what I'm saying. Joe Biden is not proposing to make Anita Alvarez a significant part of his administration. And he is proposing that Mayor Rahm be the ambassador to Japan, which will help rehabilitate his image. And the rehabilitation of Rahm's image began at that hearing, and it sort of followed up, like the Sun-Times editorial said, well, there was no cover-up. Joe Ferguson writes a letter, well, there was no cover-up. And already, Matt, you know what I'm saying? Already, I'm like, I'm seeing it happen right there in front of me, like history being rewritten. It's very painful to have to sit through it again, if you follow what I'm saying.
I do. And, this is why I've taken great exception to a number of things about, you know, about Joe Ferguson's letter to the Senate on this that I'm happy to, you know, I'm sure we're going to get deeper into. And it starts with this. To me, I mean, just plain and simple, violating the Freedom of Information Act is a cover-up. And, you know, we're told in the preamble, in the flowery language at the beginning of the statute, that this is fundamental to the constitutional form of government. In complying with the law is a fundamental obligation of our government that is necessary for the people to fulfill their duties, not just their rights, but their duties to monitor the government and ensure that it's being conducted in the public interest. And when you violate that law, that's what you're violating. You are interfering with the public's ability and duty to hold the government accountable. And that is a cover-up to me. And to not say that was a missed opportunity, and it really diminished the significance of violating the law and to not call that a cover-up. And it would be one thing to say, you know, I conducted an investigation and I did not find sufficient evidence to recommend any criminal charges be brought against Rahm Emanuel. This is like Jim Comey with the Hillary Clinton emails, which is an issue that, you know, I frankly kind of see both sides of it. There was, you know, typically that isn't what law enforcement does, but I get it. If you wanted to say there's all these things floating around there and I just want to set the record straight. Okay. Set the record straight, but set it straight about the things that you would be investigating, right? Set it straight about, I didn't find evidence of a crime or whatever it is that was actually being investigated, then say that. But this goes way beyond just saying that.
All right. I'm going to close it by changing subject. Get your thoughts about something that's really been on my mind, having nothing to do with Rahm Emanuel, Kwame McDonald, or the city of Chicago. And it has to do with the assassination, the killing of Malcolm X. And this has been really on my mind lately, Matt. I finally got around to seeing the Netflix documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X? And I've read books on the subject. And the issue of who killed Malcolm X, who was potentially behind the murder, not just literally the man who pulled the trigger on the shotgun that killed Malcolm X, but the possible conspiracies between Elijah Muhammad and the FBI, what role the FBI had in all this, is buried in records that have not been publicly released by the FBI. Malcolm X was killed in 1965. So my question to you is this. It's similar to records regarding the killing of Martin Luther King in 1968, the killing of John Kennedy in 1963. How can the FBI continue to get away with burying records of what they were up to in these very important and significant murders? Fred Hampton is another one just popped into my mind when I was just sitting here just talking. But let's keep it right here. How could they continue 50, 60 years later to get away with withholding information about what role they had in these murders? How can they do that?
They can do that because you haven't yet made a FOIA request for them and you haven't come to me yet when they deny your FOIA request.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that is partly the answer. But, I mean, so part of that could be this idea that, like, about privacy. And this was a central issue in the case I had on parts of the Mueller report and why, you know, certain people, probably Don Jr., weren't charged with campaign crimes. There's the federal courts in particular are very generous to people who are found in FBI files, in part because of all this J. Edgar Hoover kind of stuff and abuse, and saying, you know, that was abused, and it's an invasion of people's privacy for the world to know that they were the subject of an FBI investigation. So what you could have is to the extent those people are still alive, because if they're no longer alive, that goes away. But if they're still alive, you know, there could be some claims that, like, well, you know, they have to withhold some things because it would invade the privacy of people who've been investigated, but they haven't been charged with any crimes. They could also say, I suppose, that they're still investigating and that it would interfere with their investigation to release it. That seems kind of thin to me, to say the least. Now, you know, with with Kennedy and Martin Luther King stuff, I think those are more, to the extent these are like what you're talking about are congressional investigation records, then you're outside of the world of FOIA, and that and you don't have any right to try to get congressional records. But if you're talking about the FBI records about the murder of Malcolm X, I think that's a great case. Honestly, I think that there's some things they could throw at it, but I think there's very good arguments that stuff ought to be released. And all this privacy stuff can be outweighed by the public interest in disclosure. And boy, is there public interest in disclosure on that, and especially knowing what the FBI's role might have been in that, and you know what they knew and didn't do anything about, or whatever the answer may be. So I think you've just described to me like what I think the next really big case I do ought to be.
Well, firstly, have you seen the documentary, the Netflix documentary, Who Killed Malcolm X, by any chance?
It's on the list. I haven't yet watched it.
I urge you to watch it. There's so many issues at play. Were the gunmen themselves FBI informants? So we know that the member of the Black Panther Party in the city of Chicago who was an FBI informant, he drugged Fred Hampton. He gave the FBI the layout of the apartment. We know that. Now, we should know, I think, whether the people who killed Malcolm X were FBI informants. How many FBI agents were in the Audubon ballroom at the time? I mean, I don't mean to turn this Emmanuel thing into a Malcolm X thing, and I should probably just close it down because I can go on and on, as you can see. But yes, I would welcome a bulldog like Matt Topic to get a hold of that baby, and because it's really disheartening, just to put it mildly, to see how much of the truth is being concealed from us by people who are supposed to be looking out for our best interests, Matt. And so that's about all I can say on that.
It is just about the worst thing you can do to a democracy is for people in positions of power to violate the law and violate the public trust and lie to us and keep things secret. It's so utterly destructive to the democracy that we're supposed to have.
Well put, and that's probably as good a place to end the interview. Matt Topic, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I called you immediately. I urge everybody, check it out. It's an editorial that he wrote, or an essay, I don't know what you call it, but it's in the Chicago Sun-Times from Wednesday, December 1st. Release more records to determine if Emmanuel engaged in Laquan McDonald video cover-up, by Matt Topic, T-O-P-I-C. You can find it. Just go to the Sun-Times. You'll find it. Matt, great essay, and thank you for coming on my show.
Thanks for having me, and keep up the awesome work.
All right, that's Matt Topic. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.